Now, we've had a number of remote viewers on the program before. A number of remote viewers. This time we'll take a look at Simeon Hine and his views on Coast to Coast AM. Simeon, so you got involved in remote viewing in 1996, so you've been at it for 10 years now. Has it changed your life to the point where you have learned things that you never thought you'd learn before?
Oh, absolutely, George. Once you get into an area like remote viewing, it really opens up lots of doors to all sorts of other topics that at least someone like myself, you know, with a background in sociology, statistics teacher, so forth, you know, things you never would have looked at before, but you can begin to see evidence that they're real. Just like things like channeling and perhaps communications with the other side, EVP, things like that, crop circles, absolutely extraterrestrials. And, you know, it really introduced me to a concept. I've been trying to think, how are all these concepts connected? And what I came up with a couple years ago was this idea of planetary intelligence. And it's just the idea that we all have this type of innate intelligence to communicate with other life forms and with the world around us, a type of awareness, but that because we grow up in such a mechanistic mindset, we just stop listening to that kind of inner intuition that we all have. We stop tapping into our subconscious, and we all have it. And, you know, when you go to a remote viewing class or you teach people remote viewing, we call it resonant viewing, of course, because we think it's a form of resonance.
Sure.
But what you find, George, is you're not really teaching anybody anything. You're reminding them of something that they already have. It's an innate ability that we all have to listen to that very subtle side of ourselves that gives us very accurate information, but we may not listen to or pay attention to. And, you know, there's a very good example of that a couple of years ago. You remember the horrible Indonesian earthquake and the tsunami from 2004?
Yes.
Yeah, and you remember those just horrific pictures of all those bodies in the water?
Mm-hmm.
But there were certain groups of people that had a near 100% survival rate, and it was actually the so-called most primitive peoples in that part of the world. You know, the people on the Andaman Islands?
The island was empty. Everybody didn't know what happened to them, but they escaped.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because they had these, they knew what to do when the water moved out away from their island. They were paying attention. And the anthropologists thought that these people would be completely wiped out, you know. They could never land there on the island sometimes because these people would shoot arrows at them with their bows and arrows. But when they landed on the island, they found that everyone had survived because they had these stories about the waves that eat people. And when the water pulled out, they all knew, even though none of them had ever seen a tsunami before in their lifetimes, they had these stories in their culture about this deadly wave. And so when the water pulled out back, they knew what was coming, and they all went to higher ground. But there were other peoples that did the same thing. The Moken people, 60 Minutes did a story about this. The Moken people off of Thailand, they had these same stories in their tribal history. And they all moved up to higher ground, but the other Thai fishermen that were around there that were just focused on catching the fish, they all perished because they didn't know what that meant when the water pulled out. They didn't know that the wave that eats people was coming. And so in my mind, that's very similar to the things that we're talking about now, because it means if you pay attention to what's going on around you, if you kind of have an awareness of your environment and the subtle signals that it's giving you, then you have access to a whole branch of intelligence, what I call planetary intelligence, and you have more information available to you. And I think that a lot of the things that we're talking about now, crop circles, remote viewing, etheric communications, are all a form of subtle communications within ourselves that we all have, but we just don't necessarily develop and listen to all the time.
Now, is this remote viewing or intuitiveness?
I think it's really related. When you study remote viewing and you take any of these courses from any of the military viewers that have been on the program from time to time, or any of the civilian
teachers. Hal Putoffs, the Ed Dames, Paul Smith, Engel Swan, all those people.
Lynn Buchanan and so forth.
Yeah.
It's really a form of intuition training. You'll find that it's not all that different from those gut feelings and hunches you have from time to time that a family member may be in danger, or you just feel like you should go a different route to work only to find out there was an accident down the road, or you do something for an unexplained reason, and you just for some reason do something and you can't rationally explain it, but you find out later that was the right thing to do. That is all listening to your subconscious, which we now know has a much broader bandwidth than the conscious mind. And if you look at it numerically, you'll find that of the 40 million bits of information that come into your mind every second, only about 16 of those 40 million bits are actually in your conscious mind, less than a hundredth of a percent. The rest is all in the subconscious. So we know from all the physiological research, George, that we receive a huge amount of information every second, but our conscious mind is a huge deletion machine and deletes all the things that it doesn't think you need to know for your survival, because it's this kind of scanning mechanism for danger. But it throws away a lot of information. And what remote viewing teaches you to do is to listen to that more subtle information that is in your subconscious, but it's below what we call the limit. It's below the threshold, the subliminal threshold of your awareness. Once you start paying attention to all the information below that awareness, you'll find that you're much more in contact with your intuition, and that's where the RV signal comes from. We don't know exactly how the RV signal gets to you, but once it's in your subconscious, that's how you access it. It's some sort of non-local communication system. Some people believe it's a quantum signal. Other people, like Dr. Tiller, think that it's kind of a magnetoelectric signal, and other researchers like Russell Targ and Hal Puthoff, who've been on the show from time to time, have their own ideas about what it is. But it's a non-local information that is coming from seemingly a distant place or a person. But it's getting into your awareness, and if you can tap into your subconscious, the information is there, and it can be very accurate, as you know.
Simeon Ingo Swann's book, Penetration, where he talks about some incredible things in his remote viewing career, we call him the father of remote viewing, saw some objects, alien objects, on the moon. And if it were anybody else, I'd say, great imagination, that's interesting. But because it was him, and my aunt thought so much about him, the aunt who dabbled in parapsychology, she was a doctor, I got to believe that this guy saw something in his remote viewing session. He doesn't like to talk too much about that anymore.
No.
I'm trying to get him on the show. He's fighting back from his health problems, and mm-hmm. I think he may do this program. But he saw something on the moon, and that, to me, is one of the most startling aspects of remote viewing I've ever heard. Have you looked into that?
Yes, it's absolutely startling. I couldn't agree more. It's completely startling because we know that Ingo is a very accurate viewer. And this is the whole thing about remote viewing, George. It shows you things that startle you, that you just would never believe. You would think it's coming from your imagination. And yet I asked Hal Puthoff about Ingo's book, Penetration. And he told me, point blank, that Ingo didn't make it up, which is a very subtle way of saying, if you've had a security clearance and so forth, you can't talk about it directly, that it's real. And I'd love you to get Ingo on the show again, because that book, Penetration, is extremely important. You know, it's out of print now, and it sells for $300 a copy on Amazon.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you. Sometimes it sells for up to $1,000.
Mine's going for $15.
Well, you check out on different secondhand book sites, and it's very expensive to get because it's out of print. But it's a very important book, and you're right. You know, Ingo was on with Art a couple of years ago, and he's very hesitant to talk about the contents of that book. But you know, if you've read it, that he talks about a lot of startling things, including the ideas you're mentioning, that there are extraterrestrials on the moon. And that is one of the things that we can use RV to do. We can look at so-called anomalous targets. These are things that we can't verify directly at the end of the session. You know, the so-called feedback.
Right.
We can't go to the location as if it's the Eiffel Tower or Mount Kilimanjaro or something that we can verify immediately if the viewer was on target. If they're viewing the other side of the moon, we don't know exactly what they're getting. But if you have someone like Ingo with a very good track record, and they've been doing very good work with regular sort of verifiable targets, it suggests that what they're getting with their non-verifiable targets is accurate, too. And Pat Price was another viewer that came up with all sorts of interesting information about extraterrestrial bases on the Earth.
Well, he's gone from, no, I can't do the show, to finding out that Dr. Shafika was my aunt, to, and he adored her. To, well, I might be able to do, you know, if I get a little better. And so I don't know. I think he's going to go. And if he does, I've got to talk to him about that book.
Yeah, it's very important because he talks about using RV to view the extraterrestrials. And the idea, George, that once you contact extraterrestrials, they can view you back. which was something that we actually found at Farsight a long time ago. We all had this experience once we started viewing extraterrestrial targets. Believe me, that was one of the strangest things I ever encountered coming from viewing regular, ordinary 3D objects on Earth. The energy feels very different. It just feels different. But at the end of the session, you don't know if you just made that up or not. And maybe we won't know for a while once we have some sort of contact eventually. But when you have someone like Ingo with his stature, and he's getting this very accurate information, and not only that, George, I mean, he talks about a lot of government sponsorship of his viewing. He won't name the agency that sponsored him.
We can guess, but right?
We can guess. And we're going back to the 1970s now. And they actually told him that he could write a book about it 10 years later because they would have been absorbed into another agency. It lends credence to the idea that this is a very important topic that is highly classified, as many other people on the show have testified to from time to time. This is a very important topic that we need to know more about what's going on here. This can't remain in the closet. We need to find out with viewing and other means, you know, what do we know about who these extraterrestrials are? Are they on the moon? Are they on the Earth? It's just very important for us to know this and for ourselves, for our society, to keep evolving and developing.
Are you still practicing remote viewing?
Sure, I practice it all the time, and we practice as groups sometimes here in Boulder. It's something that's never ending. But what you find after a while is that you stop using the strict protocol that we've all learned, the so-called CRV protocol that the Stanford research developed and military later adopted. And sometimes you just do it spontaneously just to see, for fun, to see if you're right or wrong, even with a regular target or some aspect of your life. And it's a lot of fun to see that what you have happen in your life is a lot more synchronicities.
Right.
And kind of spontaneous information gathering. Mel Riley referred to this once. Things just seem to come across the radar screen sometimes. And the big difference is between you as a viewer and before the time you knew it is instead of just pushing it away and saying, well, that's just, you know, some sort of imagination, that's not real, you actually take it a little more seriously. Sometimes you act upon it, and you'll later find that the reason you made that decision or went into that store or called a certain person is that there was something important that you needed to experience. And that some part of you knew about that. It just, you didn't listen. Your conscious mind stops being a dictator. You just stop listening completely to your rational mind and follow your intuition a little bit, your flow. And you'll find that it often really helps you out a lot. And that's really the reason to learn RV.
Are you pretty accurate?
A lot of the times the sessions are very accurate, and I still kind of surprise myself. And even not every single one is 100%. But it's a lot more accurate than you would expect if it really didn't work. And a lot of the times, it's actually a replication of the target, and that's always shocking. Even after years, you just drew something that you didn't see, and you always wonder, how did I do that? Everybody has that experience in RV, and that's what makes it so much fun.
Do you look at real time when you remote view events that are occurring right now, or do you, like Ed Dames, have the ability to go into the future?
Right. You can view all variety of targets on the temporal scale. You can view historical targets in the past. You can go back and view historical events, and you might want to do that to find out exactly what happened. You can go back way back into the distant past, at the time of the dinosaurs or before, to find out what's going on. Then you can view contemporaneous targets, things that are going on right now, and you can also view targets in the near future or way out there to see what happens. And, of course, those you don't totally know, but if it's just something 2 weeks ahead, you can actually see, get some information about what's going on, like if it was a presidential election or something like that, you kind of look at the colors to see if it was going to be primarily a Democratic or Republican victory of a presidential election. You can kind of view an event and look at what colors are shown there, something like that to get a hint. RV, George, doesn't tell you answers directly. It's not like a yes or no thing. What you can look at are patterns of data, and from that you have to be a little bit of a psychic detective to infer a little bit from what that means. But it's much more accurate than you would expect it to be, and sometimes you just really surprise yourself, and that's really what makes it, always challenging, always very surprising.
Do you have any future predictions for us via remote viewing that you can share with us?
Well, you know, we're mainly focusing on teaching people. We have our classes from month to month, and our main focus is on education, but occasionally we do future targets. One of the targets we like to view is there going to be an official disclosure event by the government of the existence of extraterrestrials?
Stephen Bass says yes.
Right. That's what we've gotten. I would say that from my sessions, every time we give someone that target, is there going to be official government disclosure? we get something related to some event where there is something revealed about extraterrestrials. What it seems to be is not a really huge event. It seems to be something that's small, but for those of us in the know, the Coast audience, will know exactly what that means. It's going to seems to be a gradual disclosure, not something like a huge flyby, which is completely undeniable, but kind of a gradual admitting, a little bit along the lines of Paul Hellyer from Canada.
The former defense minister.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, is that a disclosure or not? This is a guy that worked for the Canadian government, equivalent to our Secretary of Defense, and he's saying UFOs are as real as airplanes in the sky overhead. That, to me, is a type of disclosure. Small, not carried by a lot of media outlets, but a few. And that is the sort of thing we're looking at, is gradual disclosure in increments rather than all at once.
Wait till you hear Linda Moulton Howe's report on our program Friday night, where she has talked with a former Navy yeoman. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, this guy is so credible, so poignant in what he says about what the government knows. It's almost scary, Simeon.
Yeah, well, these witnesses that you often have on Coast, and these people are so credible sometimes, it's shocking. I love listening to their testimony. And that's how we know so much about this subject, George, is so many of these people from the military are coming forward from time to time, like you're going to have on Friday. And you know these people know what they're talking about, and it's just amazing to hear their stories. It so makes the whole thing so exciting.
Well, and you wonder, when is the government going to come forward and admit this, when you have people like she's going to disclose Friday night on the program? It's mind-boggling.
Well, you wonder if they're even capable of having a disclosure event, or if it takes people that are retired like Paul Hellyer and other people like that, people that don't actually are, not currently employed by the government, who can do it. Because the implications of this, George, are so huge. It's almost like a cosmic Watergate. And there's so many credible people who are telling us about these programs, which you and I have no knowledge about. Even our elected officials don't know about these programs. So you got to wonder who's running the show. I think it's going to cause a lot of questions about who are we and what sort of political system do we have, because we're built on this idea of accountability. And if you have a lot of evidence from remote viewing and from these disclosure-type witnesses that all points in the same direction, and yet we can't get anyone to talk about it, but we know that it's real, you have to wonder who's running the show. And it ought to make all of us ask a lot of questions about where we live and what we're doing. We need to keep going forward with this using any means we have to get more information, because I think our survival on the planet depends on us continually evolving and learning about what is our place in the galaxy, and who our neighbors are, and so forth.
All right, so you wanted me to do a quick remote viewing session within your house.
Okay, here we go.
And I'm going to do it. And I did two quick glimpses of the last few minutes, and I don't know if I'm right on the button, Simeon, or way off, but I'll just tell you. First of all, what I didn't see last time you were on the program, what I see now is some kind of flat screen or bigger screen television set that I didn't see a year and a half ago. What's my take on that?
Yeah, that's correct. I did move a new monitor into this office. It's a couple feet away from me.
Interesting.
And it wasn't here last time we did the show.
Okay, and I'm also seeing something that it's not a model ship, but it's some kind of art form that is very different, that looks like it either could have come from one, or it's just made strange. And so I can't see it, other than it seems to be sticking up on a pretty solid base. I don't know what that is.
I'm wondering if that is a certain sacred geometry shape that I had sitting right next to my computer for a long time that could be construed as a kind of a construction or something. I'm not sure exactly what that is, but right in front of me is kind of a strange shaped fluorescent light that is sticking up on a base. And it has a lot of angular geometry.
Yeah, see, I see, tentacles going everywhere.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm not sure exactly what that is. That could match a couple different objects around. Let me think about that one throughout the rest of the show.
Stay with us, Simeon. We'll be back. We'll take some fast blast questions for Simeon Hine when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, nothing will thrill me more than to write checks to needy Coast to Coast listeners from the list that we have assembled. after my book hits the market on September 19th. As a matter of fact, because a couple of those letters seemed to be very urgent, I went ahead and wrote a few little checks and sent them on some time ago. But here's the deal. The book's available on Amazon.com right now under pre-orders at a steep discount. There is a link on coasttocoastam.com right at the bottom of the homepage. It takes you straight to Amazon.com. It is one of the fastest-selling books that has not come out yet than they've ever had. His publisher can't even understand what's going on. I keep trying to tell him about you, but he's finally beginning to realize it. Worker in the Light by me and William Burns, B-I-R-N-E-S. Portion of those proceeds I am writing to needy coast-to-coast listeners. It's the honor system, but there's some of those emails that I will never, ever will I believe that they were made up, because they're just too heartwarming. So I'll be back in a moment, and again, look forward to this coming out September 19th. But Amazon.com is taking pre-orders at a steep discount right now. And welcome to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Dr. Simeon Hines. Simeon, a lot of people on these fast blasts, we're going to go through this half hour before we take live phone calls next hour, want to know why remote viewers can't tell us where Osama bin Laden and the rest of his cronies might be. Only really one person, Sean David Morton, has said that he believes bin Laden is dead. So that's what he's saying. But how come, you know, we can't get all of the remote viewers to simply say, this is where he is, go get him?
Well, it's a good question. And George, you know about RV, it really requires feedback. So viewing any particular person, location, or place, it requires that you get some sort of feedback after the session. And viewing someone like Osama bin Laden is more kind of an operations and logistics question than it is an RV question.
Which the military would have done when they were conducting their own remote viewing program,
I would assume. But we don't have the resources to do that. And I think Russell Targ has pointed that out on this show in the past. We could do a viewing session. Those of us who view here at the Institute for Resonance and other viewing groups, we could get together and view it. But how do we know if we're right or not without flying over to Afghanistan or Pakistan and looking through all the different caves? You know, when you get the RV data, you're going to have descriptions of landscapes and locations and so forth. That has to be analyzed by people that know that area. And unless you can actually match it up with a known location, it's not going to help that much. So we can do the viewing session, but to get the feedback, we would have to spend sizable amounts of resources for someone to fly us over there, provide security. I mean, what do you think our lifespan is going to be like if we land in Waziristan and we say we want to get feedback on our Osama session and we start walking around? Well, you know, it has to be done in a way that is safe for the viewers, and you have to fly people over there, or someone has to get information back. So it's a good question. It always comes up with RVers. If it really works, why can't you find Osama? This would have to be coordinated by some agency that had the resources to look at the viewing sessions, analyze the viewing sessions, and then actually go out there and take a look in the different caves or wherever you'd come up with. And it might not be, you know, Afghanistan or Pakistan. So, again, I think it's more an operational question than it is an RV question. We can do RV on, like, an outbounder where we send somebody out from our office area and have them walk around Boulder or so forth. They did this a lot in Palo Alto and San Francisco. And then we can see at the end if we could view where they were, and they can come back and say, I was at such and such a location. We can compare the sessions to where they were. But in this case, if we view an unknown and we can't get the feedback, and even Ingo says he won't do sessions where he can't get the feedback. If we can't get the feedback, we just don't know if we're right or wrong.
Well, wouldn't the feedback, though, Simeon, be that we caught him or we, you know, shot him or something, and they let you know?
Someone at the other end is paying attention to what we're doing. And it just would take a lot of resources to actually look at the sessions and do this. Even when I was at Farsight, Courtney would send some of our sessions into the government. And I don't think they ever really wrote back in a way that confirmed or denied what we had written. And there have been other sessions where I, locally here, where I attempted to give information to the police on particular crimes and so forth that had been committed. And I said, you know, I did the session on a particular crime in the area that I was interested in because it was near where I worked, and I thought I could help. And I contacted them, and they said, we're just not interested. So you're going to find this prejudice against RV. This is why the program was ostensibly canceled in 1995. There's a lot of resistance to this methodology, and we know from the fallout from 9/11 that these intelligence agencies don't always work so well together. They even found that out in the Patricia Hearst kidnapping when Stanford came in to help the police department in San Francisco with Pat Price. You know that story.
I remember that.
Picked out. Yeah, you were talking to Russell Targ about that, and Pat Price apparently picked out the leader from a mug book and where the getaway car was. But then apparently you had the sheriff's department competing with the FBI, competing with the San Francisco Police Department about who had jurisdiction over the case. And they never called Stanford back, and they were convinced they could have found Patricia Hearst, you know, that day.
A little sooner. That's right.
Right. So I think the same thing is going to happen. In an ideal world, we could give our sessions to whoever was responsible for looking at that, and we could perhaps accomplish the things we need to accomplish. But I think in this case, you don't have the coherency or the cooperation between the different intelligence agencies that assures me that if we sent the sessions in, that it would even be seen by the people that need to see it. And I think you can see from what we've seen in the news recently, it's just too disorganized. We're still reorganizing that whole level of our government so that it can do its job properly.
Here, Hunter from York, Pennsylvania wants to know if you can review lotto numbers by remote viewing. He's asking you to give him the next Powerball numbers. He said he's in a desperate situation. His wife's pregnant. He can't find a job. He's looking. He needs a little help. Now, Aaron Donahue, the self-described Luciferian who had dames trained, claims that he picks lotto numbers. But how about you? Did you ever try that?
Yes. In fact, we did it not too long ago. And we viewed lotto numbers. There was this technique we learned at Farsight for picking out numbers that apparently was taught by the extraterrestrials to one of the viewers. I don't know how this viewer came up with this. But we did do the system, and we got 3 out of 6, which is pretty good. Now, RV is not 100% accurate. You know that, George. But it gets you a lot more than if you're just guessing. And in this case, 3 out of 6 is like 1 out of 1,000. But it only gave us $10. But there is another system called ARV, which we teach occasionally and other viewers teach. You know it's called associative remote viewing. And it's a way that people play the stock market. I know Sean David Martin, who was on the show.
He seems to be hot with the stock market.
Now he used to do this with his so-called spook group back at Stanford. And they apparently made, I think it was around $100,000 or more. I could be wrong about that, for a silver futures investor just picking targets and matching them up with future outcomes on the silver's market and asking the viewers which target, you know, they see themselves being shown a couple days later. It's a kind of way of tunneling through time. People that have done this seem to be doing it pretty accurately. We've done it with play money from time to time, you know, Monopoly money for fun. And the one time we did it that way, we got it right 10 out of 10 times for the S&P 500, which is 1 out of 1,024, the odds of getting that by chance. It was a pretty good success rate. But once we put real money into the pot, I had viewers calling me up like every hour, you know, we're making money, we're making money. We know from the research into the subconscious that when you're working under pressure, the subconscious doesn't do as well. So there's kind of a paradox here, George, and to the Coast listeners, is that when you're doing it and you're detached from the outcome, in other words, when the outcome has no impact on you, it seems to produce better results than when you really care about the result in a personal way. And that's, I think, the challenge for using this with lotto numbers or the stock market, is that if you care too much about the outcome, that creates stress. And we know from the physiological research, and there's a great book about this, by the way, called Hare Brain, Tortoise Mind by Guy Claxton. He goes through all the physiological research about how stress interferes with the ability of the subconscious to pick up information. And I think that's the barrier we face when we do that sort of, use an RV for that sort of financial gain. I'm not against it. It just seems to have inherent barriers. At least that's my experience.
Have you ever RV'd the past?
Yes. One of the first sessions I ever did, which was really stunning for me, was viewing the destruction of the dinosaurs. This was, again, back at the Farsight Institute.
That is fascinating.
Absolutely. It was 60 million years ago, apparently. And what was amazing about that session for me was I bilocated. Do you know what that term bilocation means in an RV?
Well, that's what I do. I live in St. Louis and Los Angeles.
Yeah, you're bilocated.
All right.
But what it also means is that you could actually feel you're at the target location and the room around you disappears. It's actually not considered a desirable RV state because you forget to write down what you're getting. And this system, you're supposed to write down everything you get. That's the golden rule of RV, is to write down every thought you have. And it seems to work very well that way. But when you bilocate, it's like being in a movie. And in this RV session with the dinosaurs, the destruction of the dinosaurs, I actually began to see this swampy area and these creatures lifting these large kind of leafy materials with their long necks out of water. I couldn't believe this. And then the sky, George, it was this intense azure blue. And the air was so fresh. I've never smelled air like that in my life. But in the RV session, I could smell this incredibly fresh air. And I just said, this can't be Earth right now. This is not the Earth that I know, because it's just crystal clear. But as my monitor moved me forward in the session, using a kind of a movement exercise we have to move in time, all of a sudden, everything was just covered in dust. There was just this dust everywhere. And the life had been extinguished that I could see from my particular angle on that. The dinosaurs weren't there, and everything was cold and gray and dusty.
This is after the fact that the big hit.
It suggested something like a meteor impact or whatever else happened at that time.
Series of volcanoes, maybe?
Exactly. Something like that, like some cataclysmic event which caused a global cooling and a dust. Like, I guess could happen nowadays again with some of these volcanoes that are active, you know, Yellowstone and so forth. Yep. They say that could happen again sometime in the next 100,000 years. But that was a session from very long ago that was one of the few sessions where I actually felt it was viewing, because I really felt like I was there, and it was like being in a movie theater.
Wouldn't you like to go back and see how they made the pyramids?
Yeah, we've done that session from time to time. And for me, it wasn't quite as stunning as the dinosaur session, but other people have gotten very interesting information that suggests that the viewers I've worked with, that it suggests that the pyramids were built with sound or some sort of advanced technology that I don't think we can even understand. You have to understand, George, that when you're viewing the past or the future, you're going to be perceiving things that you don't quite have words to describe. Like if you took a laptop computer back even 100 years ago, no one's going to know what that is.
You better bring a charged battery with it.
Yeah. Exactly. And so when you're viewing, you can move into the future like the people that attempt to do technology transfer and so forth. But you may not even just go like 20 years ahead from where we are now. We're going to have technology around that we don't have today, that we don't even conceive. You don't quite have the words to describe, and you're really limited by your vocabulary. So in the pyramid sessions, people have described a type of sonic technology that suggests that there's something levitating the stones. That's just what the session suggests that I've seen. But we don't understand exactly what it is.
Birthday boy Richard C. Hoagland wants you to remote view what happened to Mars 65 million years ago. He's asking if you could do that for him.
It's a fantastic target, and we'd be glad to take a look at that. Richard, we've viewed the Cydonia region a lot. I give that target quite frequently to our...
What have you seen there?
Well, every time we view it, or most of the time, we've seen an advanced civilization. Very active. A long time ago. We're talking a long time ago, though. Millions of years. And I guess that's consistent with what Richard and other researchers have found. But we find networks of tunnels, very active society there.
At that time?
Yes, at that time. Definitely humanoids. And for me, it was, again, a very strong session. I did it a while back. But I still remember what the beings looked like that I could see in my viewing session. And they seemed a little shorter than humans. They seemed very intelligent. And they seemed to be, at least when I was viewing them, engaged in some sort of bartering trade. They were very animated, and they were under the Cydonia region. They were underground, actually, at the time. Could not go above ground, but what I viewed was underground. And Mars is a great target. We love to view that.
I was going to say, this underground, you may have already answered it then. Do you think they were forced to go underground?
I don't know. There's only so much you can tell from every session you do. We're all human. There's only so much you can view in one session before you've just had enough, and you can't view anymore. You exhaust your viewing skill for that session, and your subconscious breaks off target contact. But what we've done is viewed the Cydonia region over and over again for years now. I love to view that target because I want to see if it's consistent with what we know from the different Viking photos, and now it's exciting because we have this new space orbiter around Mars. And, we talked about the importance of feedback. I'm really curious to see if what we find out in the next 6 months, with all the help we'll get from Richard and Coast kind of coordinating what the observer looks at, possibly at the University of Arizona, that maybe it'll give us some feedback on some of the viewing sessions we've done to view some of these anomalous regions that really look like they have man-made structures and things that don't look natural, because our viewing sessions have certainly picked that up, even to the extent of viewing targeting the particular inhabitants of Mars, a particular strata within Martian society to look at their technology at the time. And it really seems to be a very active society that has a much stronger connection to us than we would even...
What did they look like, Simeon?
They seem to have reddish skin, a little more, I guess, like Native Americans, possibly.
But they did look human?
They looked very much human. They didn't... Here, that's a very good question, George, because, you know, when we think about ETs, we often think of the classic gray morphology.
Or reptilian.
Reptilian or the blondes or something like this, and often very strange sort of descriptions. But these, what surprised me in almost every RV session I've seen about Martians is that they seem surprisingly human, which made me wonder, even at the time 10 years ago, if they weren't human or if they weren't our ancestors in some way. And I know this is a topic that's been suggested. We don't have the evidence to prove that yet, but the session seemed to suggest that, because it seems too close to me to be something that just happened randomly, that we ended up looking like them and that we have no common source. I'm betting from our viewing sessions that we have a common history with the Martians at some level, because that's what all the viewing sessions that I've seen from Mars seem to suggest. They don't seem that different from us. They just seem like... more ancient, like pottery almost, you know, like a distant relative. That's the feeling I get from it.
What's the difference, Simeon, between remote viewing and mental time travel?
You know, really, when we're talking about remote viewing, we're talking about a kind of a controlled system where you're deliberately separating out your imagination or your fantasy from the data. That's really the strength of the CRV system, is that it separates out what we call storylines from the actual data. But at a deeper level, there really isn't any difference if you take out the protocol. It's just that you have this methodology where you don't know the target ahead of time. It's blind or double blind. But when you do RV, you do time travel, even on a regular type of target, George, because if we just take a picture of any old building, the Empire State Building or the Eiffel Tower or the Golden Gate Bridge, you know, that picture was probably maybe taken a year ago. And we're sending the viewer to look at that. Now, we could put the instruction on the target, go to the present time or go 10 years from now, but often we're just in a beginning session, we're just giving the viewer the target picture to see if they can get it. And we're telling them, don't just view the photo, go to the location at the time the photo was taken. So they're already doing time travel in even the most innocuous types of RV sessions. You know, they're going back a year or an hour or some time, because very rarely is that photo recent. When we do the outbounder experiments where we send someone out from the room and we ask them to walk around town for 20 minutes and choose a location, very specific location, we try to describe it, that's pretty much present time. But even then, we find that the viewers, and they found this also at Stanford, the viewer can view the outbounder before they even get to the target. Even before the outbounder knows where their location is going to be, the viewer can seem to view them ahead of time, almost as if it's already happened at some parallel level.
Let's see if I continue my 3-for-3 with the RV.
Go ahead.
I mean, already I think it's successful if you're 3-for-3.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have like a sketch pad on your desk or in front of you?
I have.
Are you doodling? Have you been doodling?
No, but I have a lot of blank paper right in front. Well, actually, yes. You know why?
I see circles or pyramids in front of you, or even stick people.
Yeah, well, there's lots of pictures of crop circles around, George. And there's, the cover of Opening Minds has these figures on top of the crop circles. And I do have lots of pictures of crop circles.
But, I mean, these are things I see that you made.
Not directly.
Okay.
But there are figures around on some of the pictures right next to me.
I don't know. Is that a hit for me or not?
It's about half and half. There's definitely a lot of paper around here where I can sketch.
All right, we'll be back in a moment. We're going to open up the phone lines now and give you an opportunity to talk with Dr. Simeon Hine. Crop circles, remote viewing, the ability of using resonance to change things, vibrations. I'm George Norrie. It's your turn on Coast to Coast AM.